شفتها.
حنجرة ذهبية.
إيه؟ في عربي في الراديو هين بالسيارة في شيكاغو؟
صوت إلى الزمن الجميل، زمان العمالقة والفن الحق.
ألو؟
أيوة الحق يا مرا. بقولوا عربي بالراديو، بيحكوا عربي.
مين هذول اللي بيحكوا عربي؟
هون بالراديو بيحكوا عربي على يا هلا، بيقولوا اسمهم يا هلا وهون في شيكاغو.
أنت وين هلكيت؟
أنا بالسيارة مروح من الشغل في ميشيغان أفينيو جنب الميلينيون بارك هذا، بالسيارة وما بفتح على الراديو إلا بسمعهم بيحكوا عربي، اسمهم يا هلا من 1450 من شيكاغو.
يا حج من وين بده يجي الراديو العربي؟ في أمريكا وفي شيكاغو وعلى الأي أم ومن السيارة كمان؟ والله زودتها.
إيش يعني بتقول إني خرفنيت؟ والله يا هلا 1450 من شيكاغو وعلى الأي أم، هيني بسمعهم بالسيارة ومش مصدقتيني، خذي اسمعي.
يا هلا بالضيف ضيف الله أحسب الروح، أي والله يا هلا بالضيف ضيف الله أحسب الروح، أي والله ما نرضى تروح من عنا، ما نرضى تروح، لا والله ما نرضى تروح، لا والله. ما نرضى تروح لا والله، ما نرضى تروح لا والله.
Now you are listening to Talk of the Town. Talk of the Town with Ray Hanania. Talk of the Town brought to you by LifeRun Medical Alert Systems.
And good afternoon. I'm Ray Hanania, and I'm here every Friday at 4 p.m. on YahalaVoice.com radio. And, of course, broadcast live on WCEV, 1450 AM radio. Broadcasting live from Chicagoland and around the world. It's Friday, September 5th. Our telephone number here at the studio is 708-321-1313. Our producer is Khalid. And if you want to chirp in and share your opinion, we want to hear it. Talk of the Town is brought to you by LifeRun Medical Alert Systems, the best emergency system for seniors and people in healthcare need available today. Their number is 1-800-421-3366. We're broadcast live every Friday at 4 p.m. and also rebroadcast on YahalaVoice.com on Mondays at 11 a.m. You can also go to my website at TheArabDailyNews.com to find the podcast of every show. And download it also, if you want, to your iPod right from iTunes. Make sure you also friend all of us. Yahala Voice, Ray Hanania, Rise Up Radio, Nasreen Balut, all of them. Friend us on Facebook and show some love and support. You can get the links by visiting yahalavoice.com. This week I got two guests on today's show. The first one is somebody that I followed for years. I knew her father very well. He was a mentor to me because he was one of the first Palestinians in professional journalism. His name was Aziz Shahab, and we're going to be talking with his daughter, author Naomi Shahab Nye, who, by the way, being Arab, she grew up in Ferguson, Missouri, where they had that recent shooting of a young teenage African-American, and there were a lot of protests for weeks. It's kind of died down, although now it's shifted over to the legal front. But the interesting thing was that a lot of the store owners, and I remember you see all the protests and everybody protesting over the killing of, I believe it was Michael Brown, by Officer Darren Wilson. A lot of the damage in the protest was caused to stores that were owned by American Arabs and Muslims. So we'll talk with her about her career in publishing her books. Her first book, I think, was Habibi, published in 1997 by Simon Pulse. And that was one of the first real American Arab books. I mean, there are a couple. I had my book in 1996. The humor book, I'm Glad I Look Like a Terrorist, Growing Up Arab in America. That was published the year before. But there weren't a lot of books written by American Arabs. Mine was more of nonfiction. Naomi's is fiction, but I think it was kind of about her life. I'm going to ask her when we get her on. Later on, we'll also be talking with Ali Yunus, one of the editors at the Arab Daily News. We're going to talk about a couple topics, the war in the Gaza Strip. Are there enough to move to the International Criminal Court to file war crime charges against Israel? And what are the, you know, what can be done? Could they file charges against us? We also going to talk about, I don't know if you've seen that Coca-Cola campaign. It's called Share a Name. A lot of people are reading the bottom where they have the hashtag Share a Coke. But when you read it together, it looks like Sharia Coke. And I know Khaled just got up. He says, hey, I'll be back. If it's Sharia Coke, I'm going to be drinking it. So, but you know, Khaled, Coke is on the boycott list, so we try to avoid it most of the time. Even Diet Coke. Yeah, listen, honestly, I've been addicted to it, almost like cigarettes. And you know, the Coke is, the soft drinks are worse than cigarettes, I think, but I've been addicted to it all my life, so I don't know what to do. So they picked 250 names. And if you buy it, you can look on the bottle, it'll say, a different name from Aaron all the way to Zach, I think. But there's some Arab names on it too. Khaled, unfortunately, is not one of them. They didn't think your name was important enough, Khaled. That would make me go jihad if my name wasn't on it. But you're taking it pretty good, right? You're not upset. You're not disappointed. All right. That's good. It's your name. Don't give it to them. They're making money on your name. They should be paying you. Hey, I should send them a letter. They should be paying me. I didn't even think of that. They do have some Arab names like Jamal, Ali, Amir are on there, but they didn't put Muhammad. Now, Muhammad is the most popular name in the world. More people are named Muhammad than any other name. So I'm wondering, you know, maybe if you're Muslim, you might be angry if they use Muhammad. And some Arabs might say, no, it's okay. You can use the name Muhammad because we give a lot of people the name Muhammad. So maybe we'll talk a little bit about that. And also Joan Rivers, who is brutally and sometimes viciously anti-Arab and specifically anti-Palestinian. She passed away. She was 81 years old. And, you know, it just it seems like it's so easy for American Jewish people who are in entertainment to say bad things about us, you know, Palestinians. And if we were to say something bad about the Jewish community, we'd be called anti-Semitic. We'd lose our jobs. We'd be kicked out of comedy stages, like at Zany's. And we would be punished. So I don't know. We're going to – did we get Naomi on the line? Oh, she's on the line now. Oh, let's bring her on. I didn't mean to keep her on there. Hey, Naomi, you were listening to my rant. You're probably sitting there going, oh, boy.
I'm fascinated by it. What a fascinating show. It's terrific.
Listen, you sound so Arab and American. Midwestern Arab accent. I love it, Naomi. That is so phenomenal.
That's funny. Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me on, Ray. It would mean a lot to my dad to know that we were talking today.
What a nice guy. He, you know, since we mentioned your dad, let's start with him because your dad was really a pioneer in Arab American and Palestinian American journalism. He's one of the first really mainstream professional journalists, Arabs who was in mainstream professional journalism, Aziz Shahab. And he was always a mentor to me because when he heard that I got into journalism, I would get phone messages at the Sun Times when I was there, and he would say, so happy to hear there's another Palestinian. And, you know, at the time, I was kind of like in between being American and Palestinian, and I didn't even know there were other Palestinians in journalism other than your dad. So he was a great guy. He really was a good guy, and, you know, I just definitely missed him when he passed away.
You're very sweet to say that, and he always liked you so much and appreciated your energy and your enthusiasm, and I remember him talking about you way back, and he had the same feeling of happiness that you were in journalism and people could hear your voice. He felt so strongly about people using their voices and was always urging everyone to do it a little bit more.
Did he ever say he wanted his beautiful daughter to marry Ray Hanania? Or was he smart enough to keep you away? Because I'm on wife 3.5, okay?
Oh, no. So, he never did bring up marriage.
No. Okay. I just figured it was a natural thing.
Very successful.
That's funny, Ray.
Mr. Ray Hanani is very successful, Naomi. You should marry him. We're about the same age, but you sound much younger than I do.
Well, I don't think so. No, I don't.
But he would definitely be proud of you. I mean, and I'm sure he was.
Thank you. He was proud of me because I liked to write, and I wasn't afraid to keep trying, you know, risking to send work out and send it out over and over again. And he appreciated that. You know, he always believed making an effort. He believed in revision. And, you know, he was always encouraging me to write letters to editors even when I was a kid. And, you know, he just wanted people to speak up and wanted there to be a wider sense of human rights. And the things you were saying a minute ago before the show, like how a Palestinian would get in trouble for certain things and other people did not, you know, those kinds of things, those inequities really bothered him, and he would bring it up. He wasn't afraid to bring it up.
Now, your dad dad and mom weren't disappointed that you became a writer? I mean, didn't they want you to become doctor or a grocery store owner or an engineer? Those are like the three top professions, right?
Right, yeah. No, they never suggested any particular professions to my brother or me that I know of.
I think they were
very accepting.
Your dad, I think, was Americanized, like my father, because my dad was like that also. You know, my mother could only speak Arabic when I was born, and she heard the name Dr. Raymond in the hospital. So that's how I got my name. She wanted me to be a doctor.
Oh, that's great.
But I became a journalist, and it was such an odd thing for an Arab to do. It must have been odd for your father, although when I look at pictures of your dad, the ones that you post sometimes back in the 50s and 60s, I think of the same thing, you know, like he looked like my dad. And I'm wondering, he must have been very American to have maybe created an aura that pushed you into writing in a way or made you interested in writing.
Well, I don't know if I would call it American as much as just, I think he strongly believed in, you know, freedom of speech and people expressing their opinions. So in that way, he was very American, and he appreciated that about this country and always urged people to remember how lucky we were to be able to say our opinions. But he just had a belief in the voice, you know, that you have a voice. What are you going to do with it? He was friendly. He wanted to, you know, find out what other people thought about things. And he hated oppression and domination. And so, you know, looking back at our Ferguson days, and you can imagine what a weird summer it has felt like, looking at Ferguson and Palestine both being in the news so much, and having that equivalency of domination in question, like who is dominating in this story and what is fair and what is unfair about this story. I think it would have fascinated him. He would have grieved mightily, both for the boy who was shot down in the street, but for the hundreds and hundreds of Gazan citizens who could not save their own lives. I mean, who were just helpless in the face of Israeli bombs. He would have grieved. He would have been writing and speaking nonstop. You know, I thought about him every single day, and I kept, you know, asking him in the air, what else can we do? Where can we talk? What can we say? It's very frustrating, I think, for Americans who feel the inequity at work in the world.
And who understand it a little bit, too.
Who understand and who know the backstory, Ray.
Right.
You know, I think that's something that haunted my dad. Why are people always just talking about what happened yesterday?
Right.
Let's talk about why there are all these people oppressed in Gaza. Where did they come from? And let's get a sense of backstory. And, you know, that was always something that, as a writer, he tried to enlarge the context a little bit.
Yeah,
not just talk about what somebody did yesterday, who's at fault today. He was disturbed in Ferguson by the black-white line that existed there, and he would bring it up to us. He used to say to me, this place is a tinderbox that will explode someday. And I remember saying to him, what is a tinderbox? You know, I had no idea what that even was. And he said, you know, that you just cannot keep people sort of suppressed in their behind a line. You know, you stay over there in your community. We have a better school. You have a worse school. And Ferguson didn't integrate until we had left and moved back to the West Bank. So that was an irony that I thought about this summer, like these places we've lived. You know, I look at Ferguson now and think, well, it's better, in many ways in terms of mixtures, human mixtures,
yet,
than it was when we lived there. But wait a minute, why are all these white people in power?
And then you see this kind of conflict.
The population is predominantly black.
Right, and then you see this kind of conflict where a young black teen is shot, and it's hard for me to get into all those details. But obviously, you were born, I think, in St. Louis or in Ferguson?
In St. Louis, and then my parents moved to Ferguson.
Got it.
My mom was from St. Louis, and then they moved to Ferguson when I was three because it was like a suburb where you could have a yard and, you know, it was a little more leafy and green and you could walk to school and that kind of atmosphere. And, but it was St. Louis. I mean, you felt like you were in St. Louis when you lived in Ferguson. And Chicago was our big city up the road. We loved Chicago. My father had a business there for a while. And actually, my first poem I ever wrote was about Chicago.
Wow.
And it when I was 6 years old, and it was about being stunned and inspired by the height of your buildings, which seemed very dramatic to someone coming from St. Louis, like a much more glittering, taller city, and just feeling kind of the massive excitement of there's so much world out there I haven't even seen yet. And Chicago was, for me, the first representation of the wider world that I ever had.
Well, what I love about you is that I see several things that are really important to me, and that is, one, you're very American, and yet at the same time, you're very Palestinian and very Arab, too. And then, two, you're a writer. And those things may sound to some people going, so what's unusual about that? But the truth is, we don't really have a lot of professional writers. And I wonder, it just is odd in an Arab family to have someone become a writer news, for example, in modern contemporary ways. We have a lot of people that do poetry, a lot of Middle East fiction, but you seem to have written for American audiences rather than Middle East audiences. Is that a distinction that I'm making, or do you see it or not see it?
Well, thank you for mentioning that. You know, I feel you're right. I feel there are a lot of Arab American writers, and I've gotten to know so many of them, like through the group Rawi and different radius of Arab American writers, and just gatherings we've had over the years where Arab American writers or American Arab, whichever way you say it, get together. But I do feel a compulsion, as my father did, to talk about what goes on in Palestine over and over again to a primarily American audience,
right,
wherever I am, you know, whether I'm in New Mexico or Los Angeles or Seattle or whatever place I'm in, to bring it up, because I think it's a world issue, and it's an issue that a lot of people admit they don't understand and they can't figure out, hey, wait a minute, why do these people keep fighting again? What's really going on there? And so I've always felt a compulsion to, you know, want to talk about it and maybe shed a little more light, which I do think is the job of a writer. You know, you can't solve problems, but you can turn on a few more light bulbs here and there.
Now, a lot of Arabs like you and I want to talk about the subject, and especially to talk about it to Americans. But, you know, in this country, communications is the temple of power. And not a lot of us are in communications, writing novels, writing books, journalism, like your father was rare. I mean, really, I mean, when you talk about it, there were not that many American Arabs or Palestinians in journalism. So I guess the question is, and I'd love to hear what you think. Do you think we do a good enough job in communicating to Americans, or is that the problem? Are we not really connecting community-wide or society-wide? You connect. Individuals connect.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Well, we're lucky to have, like, you have listeners and readers, and I have listeners and readers, and I think that's a very lucky thing. But, you know, whatever venue we're in, like whatever line of work one is doing, if you're able just to kind of keep telling the story, keep informing, letting people know what really has gone on or is going on. You know, my father always felt that that it was a duty that we have to let people know the truth, inform them. And sometimes if somebody would say something very racist to him about Palestinians, he'd kind of pat them on the shoulder and say, you know, my friend, you need a little more information. You need to educate yourself about this issue. You know, how would you feel if somebody came to your house? And then he would always try to make it personal and, you know, engage the person rather than fighting with them.
Rather than confronting.
Rather than confronting, he would say, you know, what would this feel like to you? And that was a tactic he had that as a child I don't think I quite appreciated, but he was able to converse with people who didn't share his own opinions or knowledge, in a very gracious way. And, always very clear to make a distinction between Jewish people who were our friends, our brothers, our sisters, and Zionists.
Right.
And that was something, as a little child, I remember thinking, well, I don't even know what he's talking about,
right.
But I heard him talk about it so much,
right,
that, you know, you start learning what is government, what are policies. And my husband and I went last week to hear Miko Peled,
right,
the Israeli activist, writer, speaker. And within the first 2 minutes, he was speaking at my alma mater university, Trinity University in San Antonio. And it struck me as kind of a weird event because it was before school started. And I thought, who's even going to come to this event? Well, it was packed.
Wow.
And that was interesting to me. And within like 4 minutes of talking, he had said the slogan we all need to share is Free Palestine. And I thought, wow, I don't even know that much about this guy, but I'm very interested in hearing what else he has to say.
Right.
And then, you know, he jumped right in saying things like, people are always talking about peace talks and they're leading nowhere.
Right.
Well, guess what? They've been meant to lead nowhere.
Yeah.
But you have to keep this slogan of Free Palestine. And he went on and on. Boy, by the end of the evening, we walked out of there and we felt like 20 or 30 pounds lighter in our brains, just to have a sense that this man is out there telling the story from a perspective that is very important. I wish my father, you know, were alive to hear him and hear how he's speaking it. And for someone who comes out of a Zionist family, you know, I was thinking, that may be a more important voice than a Palestinian who tells the same exact stuff.
I totally agree with you. I think sometimes when you have their voice speaking out,
right,
about our needs and our issues,
yes,
it does carry weight with Americans who have been conditioned over 60, 70 years to only really recognize one narrative out there regarding the Middle East. But what's really,
right,
interesting, you touched on what I think is an important topic too, and that is telling our story in a way that,
right,
Americans will read it. Because we have some great writers. A lot of them are in academics. They publish great books. One of my mentors as a kid was Ibrahim Abulughod, and he published a book,
yeah,
called The Question of Palestine, which is what helped get me educated about the issue. But a lot of Americans wouldn't read that book, but what they would read would be a book like Habibi, which you wrote.
Right.
And
yeah,
that,
thanks,
book was something that they could read and identify with and not feel like they're getting into a political argument about who,
right,
is or isn't right about being Palestinian. Just to remind my listeners, I'm talking with Naomi Shahab Nye. She's an author. Her father, Aziz Shahab, was a great journalist, probably one of the pioneers in American journalism. And I believe he passed away in October of 2007. I think it was October 22nd, if I'm not mistaken.
That's exactly right. That's when he died. And you know, Ray, 3 months before he died,
mm-hmm,
he published a book called Does the Land Remember Me?
Yes.
A Memoir of Palestine. It came out from Syracuse University Press. And an amazing thing happened. He was setting up his book signings, and he had three signings in cities in Texas where he had never lived, places like Austin. He had never lived in Austin.
Wow.
And all of his book signings were sellouts.
Wow.
You know, all the books sold out. And that meant so much to him. He hadn't even had the signing in Dallas where he lived at the end of his life. He hadn't even had that signing yet, and the book sold out. And I was so grateful that people turned out who had open minds and said, you know, does the land remember me? That's an intriguing title. I want to read about your story and what you remember. And, you know, these were not his friends and relatives turning out. These were people he'd,
right,
never seen before.
Mainstream
so
people.
That, right, and that meant so much to him. And I would urge, you know, anyone to try to tell your own story, your family's story. My father used to say, people will object to your stance. If you say, this is what is right and
right.
you're wrong, they can easily object to that. It's like you've gotten into a debate.
Right.
But if you say, this is my story, this
right.
is what happened
How
to me,
they object
this
to
is
it?
What happened
it's
to my
story.
Grandmother.
Right.
Yeah, they can't say, no, that didn't
right.
happen.
We're,
they can say, well, too bad that didn't happen to me, but they carry that story away with them. And they understand something about life a little better. And, you know, when I know my book Habibi is on a lot of school reading lists, and I get letters from kids that say things like, I will never look at the Middle East or the Palestinians in the same way again. Thank you for opening my eyes. And I really think, you know, that for me is the best review that any book could ever have.
It was very effective.
Kids saying, you know, tell us a story.
It was a very effective book because it did tell
yeah.
a story that the audience could identify.
Yeah.
And that's so important when you tell a story. We're on the line with Naomi Shihab Nye. We're talking about her father and writing and journalism, the Palestinian issue, American Arabs. We're going to take a quick break, Naomi, if you don't mind, if you want to just hang on for a minute, a couple minutes, and then when we come back, we can talk a little bit more. Your father, again, Aziz Shihab, was just a great guy. And of course you are too. You know, this is kind of tough because, you know, it's your father, and it must be a little, it's good to hear about him because people live forever when you remember them and you talk
That's
about
right.
them. That's right. I put his.
You really believe that? I believe that, Ray.
Yeah,
thank you.
I believe the same thing. And so one of the things that I've done with my website, thearabdailynews.com, is I have an obituary section on American
wow.
Arabs, and your father's obit is one of the first obits that I published there. And it sounds gruesome to some people, but I think they need, you know, to know who these people were that did
yeah.
so many great things. I'm Ray Hanania here at Yahala Voice, Talk of the Town Radio. We're here every Friday at 4 o'clock. You can listen to us at yahalavoice.com live all over, on the internet and or in Chicago at WCEV 1450 AM radio. Our number is 708-321-1313, extension 1. Our producer is Khalid. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue this discussion that if I had a five. Okay, we're going to call Ali back in a little bit, tell him. But this is one of those discussions where I can go on for 5 hours. But I only have a 1 hour radio show. So I got to bring it back, Naomi. But hang on. We're
okay.
going to take a quick break. We'll continue talking with
Thank
Naomi
you.
Shihab Nye as soon as we come back right after these messages.
Community. One hand, one voice. The Arab voice is heard with Yahala Voice.
الابتسامة الجميلة تصنع المعجزات ولكن من يصنع الابتسامة الجميلة؟ Family Dental of Lincoln بإشراف الدكتور نضال عبيد الخبير في علاج وتجميل الأسنان Family Dental of Lincoln تلبيس تبييض تقويم حشوة روت كنال زراعة أسنان وغيرها باستخدام أحدث التكنولوجيا الطبية We accept all insurance kinds and public aid even for braces Family Dental of Lincoln 5206 North Lincoln Avenue in Chicago Call and ask for Layla at 773-561-5106.
A beautiful smile can make a difference.
You have a medical alert device. When you press the button for help, can you talk through your pendant? With many companies, you still have to talk through the base unit, and that's not much help in an emergency. The answer, LifeRun Medical Alert Systems. Simply press the button and talk to a live operator right through the pendant. If your device can't do that, upgrade to LifeRun today. The system is free, the shipping is free, and the monitoring fee is less than a dollar a day. Call LifeRun now at 1-800-421-3366 or order online at LifeRun.com.
For years, the hearts of good people have broken for the suffering of the Syrians. More than 6 million displaced, nearly 3 million refugees, 80% are women. Children and elderly have faced growing hunger and deprivation. Syrians need food today. Your charity can help Syrians in need. Feed a Syrian family by donating a $50 food basket through Zakat Foundation of America at zakat.org or by calling 1-888-ZAKAT-US. Zakat Foundation of America, the leader in empowering lives through Zakat.
منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم. أفضل المنتجات الغذائية نوفرها لموائدكم. متطلبات المطبخ العربي نقدمها لكم من خلال ماركاتنا السلطان، كرافت، نستلي، بوك، ريفل بيكان، دانا. ستجدونها في كافة المحلات والبقاليات. للمزيد من المعلومات زوروا موقعنا زياد.com. منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم.
يا هلا فويس، the Arab voice in America.
يعطوني لويعة مشكري، يعطوني لويعة خلاص يا جماعة.
And welcome back to Talk of the Town. I'm Ray Hanania, and I'm on the line with Naomi Shihab Nye, and we were both kind of doing a Debka to dance to that, heavy Darbeki and Oud music that was going on. I could already feel her dancing on the other side of the microphone. She's way out someplace, yeah. I don't know where, but we were having a nice dance over there. And we want you to dance
great.
With us, too, because Arabian music is great, but so is Arabian food. We're talking with Naomi Shihab Nye. She's an author. I know you have a new book out. I want you to plug it, but I just wanted to ask you about Habibi. It sounds like Habibi is really a novel about you and what your experience was. Is it, or am I just?
I would say it's about
similar?
Half and half. You know, it's just a mixture. It's about
Got
half
it.
And half. You know, there are elements that are things that were really related to my life, but it's also a fiction story, and I like doing that in writing. You know, you're always able to improve upon a story, change it a little bit. I would say the Siti character, my grandmother, is very based on my real grandmother.
Got it. And it kind of tells a story, I think, of Arab family here in the States. The father's Arab, similar to yours. The mother's American,
yes.
Similar to yours. And then you go back and live in Palestine, which is basically your experience, right?
Yeah, and they leave St. Louis, too, which is where we went
and
from.
Right, you were,
so, yeah.
It's hard to get away from that conclusion.
There are some parallels, right, but I do like to tell kids, you know, use your neighborhood,
yes.
Use people you've met, use your neighbors, but you can also write a fiction story. So, that I think we're always doing that in writing. I mean, I think everything is both, fiction and nonfiction.
When you talk to audiences, do you talk to them about, because a lot of people are just afraid to write. And afraid to write their story. Well, what do you tell people to motivate them? I mean, why is it so important to write fiction or nonfiction?
Well, one thing I tell them is that it helps you find out about what you're living. I mean, to write about your life kind of helps you look at it and think about it. And most people feel when they keep a journal that somehow their thoughts are clarified or elements of their days. You know, what are the things you want to remember from this day? You don't want to remember everything equally, but what are some lines, some details, some elements that stand out to you that you'd like to remember? And I think it makes your life feel richer if you write about it. You know, you're able to focus better. You're able to look at how much material you have every single day. You're able to select, you know, pick the things that contribute to a sense of well-being, pick the things that are giving you trouble. Like this summer, the news was so terrible and sorrowful that, you know, I had to keep making references to it in things I wrote. It wouldn't have been what I chose to write, but that's what was happening in the world. And so as human beings, we have to respond. I think we have to feel as if there's a place to look at our own thoughts and figure them out a little better.
And so you have a book. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah. So my new book is called The Turtle of Oman, and it's set in the country of Oman. I like that country very much. I've been there. I've worked in a school there. I've met many people there. But I was fascinated about Oman from my childhood, and I rewrote the book 13 times, which is another thing I tell audiences that, you know, you don't just write, you also rewrite. You also edit and select and change and revise and figure out how you could make this story a little better. So it was about change. You know, I think it's a book for anybody, for a child who has to move, who has to make a change. So it's similar to Habibi in that way, except that in this book, the boy, Arif, is moving from Muscat, Oman, to Ann Arbor, Michigan. And that's something that often happens with Omani kids, because many of their parents go to get higher degrees in American or British universities. And so I wanted to write a story in which a boy loves his country. There's nothing about war in my book. I wanted it to be a book about, although there is a reference to refugees, I wanted it to be a book that is just filled with affection, love, for a place in the Middle East and for a grandfather in this case, and for a life. You know, I think that's something that Americans often don't get to see in the news, Arab people loving their lives. And to me, it's really important to remind them of that. The people in Gaza who just died for no reason at all that I can see loved their lives as much as all my neighbors here in South Texas do. So why not recognize that now and then? So working on the book was comforting to me and also helped me create a grandfather figure who reminds me of my own dad and his relationship that he had with our son. So I hope a few people up there in Chicago will read it, The Turtle of Oman.
I think they will. And
thanks.
Naomi, I would love it again. And I know this is, we're always imposing on guests sometimes when we bring them on here, but I'd love to have you back on the radio show just to talk about writing and your dad
Ray,
some
I would
more.
Be, oh, you're so sweet.
It's been so fun. I mean, I really enjoy it. And, you know, I just, I'm mad at your dad for not introducing me and not forcing us to get married when we were young. But what can you do? So,
that is so funny.
No,
well,
everything
you
breaks
are,
our
you
way.
Are very, very
I cook great grape leaves just in case, all right? If your husband
right,
will let you have
really
another
good.
Husband.
Please say hi to the Chicago Arab community from me.
Oh, they definitely will. And we'll hit, okay. This interview is on iTunes when we're done. And my guest, Naomi Shabnai, a great author, a number of books. Naomi,
thank
is there
you.
A place where people can should go if they want to get information about what you're doing in your books?
Well, they could just look up my name under Nye, okay. Naomi Shihab Nye, N-Y-E, and then, you know, look up The Turtle of Oman right now or Habibi, and they'll get information.
Got it. We'll do that. Naomi,
okay.
We love you. Thank you
thank
so you
much.
Thank
you so
much,
Ray.
Us.
Good wishes.
Wow, it was a lot of fun talking
keep
to
talking.
You.
Keep talking.
We will.
I
we
appreciate
believe
you.
Me, that's one thing I won't ever stop doing. You have a great day. That was Naomi Shihab Nye Khaled. I'm telling you, she's really beautiful, you know, so. This was wife number four that slipped through my fingers because at the time I was too busy thinking about journalism instead of building up a collection of wives, which, you know, I don't know. Do we have Allie Yunus on the line? Let's welcome Allie Yunus. Allie, I'm sorry. I had to put a beautiful woman ahead of you, if you don't mind. So, okay, you don't mind?
Really
good.
Odd.
Yeah, don't.
Not at all.
Don't,
you should actually.
Good. Don't hit on my women, okay, Allie? That's the only thing I ask when you come on my radio show. Allie Yunus is an editor of the Arab Daily News, where I write and where he writes and where we have a lot of bloggers. And we're always looking for new bloggers who want to write for us because we get huge traffic this month, 800,000 visitors to the website and web posts. I mean, it's phenomenal. So a lot of these posts, you could average 5,000 to 10,000 views every time somebody posts on, the, you know, at the website. So we're happy. We got Ramsey Swayze. We have Eileen Fleming. A lot of great people that are writing for us and Allie Yunus. Allie, let's talk real quick about, Palestinians thinking about going to the International Criminal Court to file war crime charges against Israel. One, do you think that's going to happen? Two, is it a wise move? Three, what about the possibility that Israel would try to turn it around on us and file war crime charges against Hamas? What do you think of all that? Did we lose him? Ah, no, geez. I think he got mad when I told him not to hit on my women, Khaled. I don't know what it is. We're going to call him back. Oh, my gosh. We'll get him back here in a second. We were having such a good time with Naomi Shabnai. She's a wonderful author and wonderful writer. And of course, I joke around with her a little bit. I think we have, Allie back on the line and we'll talk to him here about, I want to get into this, what the Palestinians should do And if you want to call, the number is 708-321-1313, extension 1, and we'll have you call in and tell us, should we file charges at the International Criminal Court? Hey, Ellie, welcome back. Thank you. Sorry about that. Hey, Ellie?
International Criminal Court, I think the Mossad.
Yeah, the Mossad is messing around. All of a sudden, we had a clear... Did you notice it, Khaled? We had a clear connection to the cell phone, and all of a sudden now we're getting this interference. Like, and the drones. I think when there are two drones following me around, it's okay. But when they get four or five drones, it causes like an interference. Can you hear us okay, Ellie?
Yes, yes.
All right, good. Do you what are the consequences that you think might happen if they go to the ICC with war crime charges against Israel?
Right. Well, I just finished a column on this. It'll be in the news tonight. It's called the Palestinian Nuclear Option, the Road to the ICC Criminal Court, how the Palestinians will go there. But first, you know, I've been talking to the Palestinian leadership for the past 3 months throughout the war, in Ramallah and Doha and Gaza. I was covering the war. So, but most recently, Mahmoud Abbas is given the his strategy, besides the ICC strategy, is given the Israelis and the Americans an ultimatum or a warning. Either let's finish this once for all, let's negotiate, have a peace deal with Palestine and the state, or I'm leaving. I'm giving you this, I'm giving you guys the Palestinian Authority, you manage the 2 million Palestinians.
Right.
So I don't know the time frame for this, because when I talked to them, I talked to the Palestinian leaders in Ramallah, they did not give me time frame, but someone told me it'll be 2-3 weeks. John Kerry is coming to the region to discuss peace with Mahmoud Abbas. And of course, this comes in the heel of the war in Gaza and the ceasefire and the upcoming negotiations in Cairo over to reopen the Gaza border crossings and rebuilding Gaza. So, but throughout this war, Palestinians charged, and especially on the Hamas side, that if it hadn't for Mahmoud Abbas not applying with ratifying the Rome Statute, that is, it becomes a member of the International Criminal Court, Israel would not have dared to bomb Gaza the way they bombed it throughout the war. And obviously we all know
do you agree with that, though? I mean, you really think Israel cares what the International Criminal Court
that's
does?
That's their argument.
Yeah, I'm wondering, do you agree with that? Because honestly, the way they did things during this war, it was like they just didn't care. You know, they could say that we're using them as human shields, but it just was terrible what they did. They killed so many civilians. I don't think they care.
Right. And at the same time, but that's the point. I think for the Palestinians, from my Mahmoud perspective, it was dragging his feet. They said, I want all the Palestinians to sign on a document, say that, okay, should we apply for the International Criminal Court? And there will be investigations not only against Israeli leaders, but also against Hamas and Fatah and every Palestinian factions, because Israel will come back and say, well, you guys have targeted civilians yourself, and just as they did. And Israel has, of course, you know, a legal argument. It's a very sophisticated legal argument they have. But in my opinion, I think it is highly unlikely that the criminal court will indict Israeli leaders the way we think that they indicted Slobodan Milosevic.
Right.
It's simply because it's a political decision at the end of the day.
Is it a political move then on Abbas's part, knowing that, you know, the only way Israel will do something is if we pressure them? They will never do anything unless they feel pressured to do it. And violence has not worked as a form of pressure. The BDS movement is having some impact, but it's still not strong enough to make a difference. Will this ICC be enough of a pressure on Israel, regardless of whether the judges, you know, agree with us and indict and convict, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu, which they should, of war crimes?
You're absolutely right. I mean, this is a leverage. This is a mean of a pressure. Because at the end of the day, Palestinians want independence. They want a Palestinian state. Not necessarily just they want to see the head of Israeli defense minister in jail, or Netanyahu in jail.
It'll make us happy for a little while, but then we'll still be suffering because we're under occupation. Right? I mean, the goal, the end goal. should be statehood.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. The end goal is a statehood. So I think this is a leverage. If, for example, Mahmoud Abbas joins the ICC, signs the Rome Statutes, and joins as a state, and I talk in my article two approaches to this, and I urge leaders leaders to go and check it out. It has details, because throughout the two approaches, one could discern where is Mahmoud Abbas is going. Is he going just to use that a political leverage, or actually wants an indictment of Israeli leaders? In which case, I think the U.S. and the Israelis and the Europeans will cut off all funding to the PA. They'll hang them dry. They'll say, if you go through with this, you're done. There's no money for you. You might as well just go take refuge in Jordan, and you are done. We'll get another one in your place. But that's maybe what Mahmoud Abbas wants, because there are different political strategies for Mahmoud Abbas, because Mahmoud Abbas and the Palestinian Authority basically have nothing to bargain with. They have nothing. In fact, Palestinian negotiations even said on air to CNN, and a reporter asked them, what are you giving the Israelis? They said, we have nothing to give the Israelis. We have nothing in our hands. The Palestinians, throughout the negotiations in Oslo for 20 years,
right,
they give up
nothing.
Every leverage, every political position they have, and now they're just reduced to begging.
Right.
Listen, and that's the problem.
Listen, part of it, I mean, in all fairness, there was a time when we could have achieved it, but the Israelis killed Rabin, and Hamas used every opportunity to prevent Rabin and Arafat from achieving anything also. I mean, in all honesty, and people get mad at me when I say it, but the truth is that not everybody on our side was really pushing for a compromise. There are a lot of people that are opposed to compromise, and they want complete one state, everything or nothing. And as you know, right now we really have nothing. So I do blame the Israelis, but there were a lot of Israelis that supported two states very strongly, but today they're muted, they're silent, they're like, they don't care.
Well, the
anymore.
Israelis are now so right-wing, Ray.
Yes.
I mean, they elected Netanyahu, they elected all right-wing governments, but at the same time, I follow Hamas very closely, and I talk to the leaders and I see them on air, I see their statements, I see a major, major difference. You will think, I mean, basically, in my opinion, Hamas' position is exactly the position of the secular Palestinian factions, Fatah.
Really? That's interesting. So they've really changed over the last 10 years.
It is the same exact position. Khaled Mashal said on air, publicly, in his statements. He said it on air. You can check it out on YouTube in English.
Right.
He said, what we want is a Palestinian state. West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem.
So
we want to live with freedom. Yes, that's what he said. And all other leaders, even in Gaza, Ismail Haniyeh said that, Sami Abu Zuhri said that, and they are very careful about their words. So you see a shift with the Palestinian demand,
right,
and Hamas is mainstream, But the difference between Hamas and Mahmoud Abbas, which is a better difference, Hamas can actually have a deterrent to Israelis. Israelis will fire a rocket, we'll fire a rocket. You fire a missile at us, you'll shoot at us, we'll shoot at you.
Right.
Whereas Israel can go to the Ramallah, arrest anybody they want to, and Palestinians they can't even shoot anything or resist, and Palestinian police, as many people know, they have orders to stand down whenever an Israeli soldiers or police are in Ramallah or in Jerusalem. In other words, by agreements with Israel, once Israeli army in Palestinian territories, in Palestinian cities or villages, mm-hmm. Palestinian police automatically should stand down or hide.
All right.
Or run.
That's
a critical difference.
Let's take a call from Amjad, who's on the line here at Yahala Voice, Talk of the Town. I'm Ray Hanania with Ali Yunus on the line. Amjad, go ahead with your comment or your question.
Ray, how you doing?
Marhaba.
Just really calling. Yamit, hello, salam.
Thank you.
Just calling to confirm and refer to based on what you were talking about when you keep saying Hamas. Do you think Hamas is a terrorist group?
Personally, I think they were, yes. And sometimes
were?
I wonder, yes. I think that back when Arafat and Rabin were negotiating, I think that the Palestinian people agreed to two states, and I think that Hamas used violence to block that. Now, I'm not saying that Israel isn't a terrorist group. Do you think Israel is not a terrorist group?
No, I think Israel is a terrorist group.
Right.
And
yeah.
Whoever says they're not a terrorist group is a terrorist himself.
Well, I agree. I think that Israel's government is a terrorist group.
I need to just correct you on one thing about Hamas. No matter what they do, by all means, you need to know that they are the Palestinians themselves. They are the children of Palestine.
And so are we. So are we.
Defending the land and the people, by all means.
Yeah, but my family lives there too.
Can I finish my sentence, please?
Yeah, go ahead.
They are defending the land of the Palestinians from the occupation. So by all means, Abbas or whoever comes and wants to make peace with the Palestinians and agrees on it, that means he thrown down something that the Palestinians don't agree on.
Well, I don't agree
so
with you. I think you're
Abbas
wrong. I think you're wrong.
Why?
I think you're wrong.
Why you say that?
Because you don't represent the Palestinian people either.
I'm a Palestinian and we all have an opinion.
Yes, we do.
I'm Palestinian.
I respect your opinion.
People, and by all means.
I respect
but
your opinion.
Referring to Hamas, the only defense the Palestinian people have is the only, and there are the people of Palestine. They are Palestinians themselves. So
yes.
How can you call them or refer to them as destructive or
because they don't represent, they don't represent all of Palestine. That's my opinion. And not just my opinion. Let me finish. That's the opinion of a lot of Palestinians who live in Jerusalem, who live in Bethlehem, who live in Nazareth in Israel. Many Palestinians agree with me, but I know it's not popular to say it, but I don't think, in my opinion, that they should represent us. I think that we have a government, and that government should represent us. And if they don't, let's go and elect a new one, the PNA. Amjad, listen, thank you very much for the call, because we only got 2 minutes left, but I appreciate your call. It was a great opinion, a great point that he made, and I think that we should discuss that more, you know, in our next show. Final thoughts, Allie? We're down to the last couple minutes of the show. I wish I could have given more time to Amjad to talk about that, because it's an important topic.
Right. The final thought, I think we should give all Palestinians, Hamas, and Fatah, and all the seculars, and the Islamists, and the Christians, and Muslims, a chance to reconcile and work as one unified Palestinian unity government,
right,
and to have one Palestinian stand, and to end the division among the Palestinians. I think that's the key, whether people support Hamas, or people are secular, people are Christians or Muslims. I think that's besides the point. And
right.
I find myself, and I've seen it, Palestinian Christians in Gaza,
right,
you know, had Muslims pray in the churches, and a great unification between all sides of
Palestine. I don't think this is a religious thing. I think it's more of a political thing. You either support compromise or don't support compromise. And
Hamas supports compromise.
Yeah.
And
I'm not criticizing those who don't support compromise. You know, there are a lot of people that say we shouldn't have two states. We should have one state. I'm just saying that, in my opinion, how are we going to have one state? Just hoping for it? Just saying it's going to happen? Just saying we won't accept anything? I'm going to reject everything?
I think
that half a state is better than no state, in my opinion. But I think we're out of time,
right,
Allie.
Right. And I just want to direct your listeners' way to go to the www.thearabdailynews and check out my column.
Yes.
On the road to the ICC, and it's called the Palestinian Nuclear Option, and we'll be up tonight. It has a lot of international legal opinions, but very simple for the lay reader to see where the Palestinians are going and how, and to better understand it. I bet you many Palestinian politicians didn't know how to go to the ICC and why we're going to the ICC and what are the different approaches to that.
Yeah,
so again, it's www.TheArabDailyNews.com.
All right, we're going to look for that. Allie Yunus on the line with me, a writer, longtime writer from Chicago and now out in the Washington, D.C. area. We appreciate it. Allie, thank you for joining us on the show.
Yeah.
All right,
we'll
talk to you later. Allie Yunus, my guest. Before him, Naomi Shahab Nayat, Palestinian author, very successful. Her father was an American Arab journalist, Aziz Shahab, who was one of the first pioneers of Palestinians in American mainstream journalism. We need more. I want to thank Amjad for his call and his opinion. We don't have to agree, but I think that's what makes our voice as Palestinians more powerful when we can discuss things. Khaled, thank you so much for running the board. I'm Ray Hanania. This show, it will be podcast. You can download it from iTunes or go to yahalavoice.com and listen to it again on Monday at 11 o'clock or go to the arabdailynews.com and download the podcast to your iPod. I'm Ray Hanania. We'll talk to you later. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.